We've looked at scorpions, and now we're going to be shortly looking at spiders and snakes and also some of the other most dangerous things on the land. But what about the dangers of the sea? Well, once again, there are poisonous creatures that our scientists are using to work out how we can use poisons that they make to our own advantage. And one scientist who's doing this is Bruce Livett. He's based at Melbourne University. And when I was there in April in Australia, I caught up with him to find out how he's persuaded a shellfish to surrender the secret of a painkiller, which is 10,000 times more powerful than morphine.
What I've been doing is exploring the potential of animals that live in the Great Barrier Reef for production of novel painkillers.
Specifically, what are you looking at?
Well, we've been looking at venomous cone shells. These creatures developed just after the death of the dinosaurs, and in that 500 million years since, they've developed a very sophisticated venom apparatus. And they go out each night and they hunt down their prey. And they do this by injecting them with a cocktail of very small molecules called peptides that make up the venom. And one of those peptides is of particular interest to us because it's a very potent analgesic. And we hope to develop this for the treatment of some very painful conditions like neuropathic pain. That's the kind of pain that you would have if you lose a limb. You might have heard of phantom limb syndrome, where people have had an accident, lost a limb, and then they can't get to sleep at night because of the pain in their so-called phantom limb, which is very real to them. Other very painful conditions, mostly this affects older people, is shingles. And once again, very painful condition and a large unmet need with existing medicines not being very good at curing the pain.
How does the cone snail actually use this? Why does it want to use a painkiller to kill something?
Well, I think it perhaps doesn't need it, the painkiller, but it uses, there are something like 200 other components in the venom. It uses these components to put its animal to sleep. And that means that the animal is not going to thrash around and they can eat it quite quietly without it feeling apprehensive. And maybe that's where the painkiller comes in.
What do these shells actually look like then, and how do they catch things?
Well, they're very pretty. There are over 500 different varieties of cone shell, and they've been collector's pieces for hundreds of years. In fact, everybody in the 1600s who had a curiosity cabinet where they kept biological specimens wanted a cone shell. And they were highly prized because they came mostly from the Indo-Pacific region, and that meant that they were quite expensive to buy. In fact, some of these cone shells sold at auction in The Hague for more than a Vermeer painting. These days, well, you can still pay up to $1,000 for a very rare cone shell, but mostly you can get a very good collection, such as the one that I have behind me there, for just $5 to $10 a piece.
But how do they actually catch stuff? How do they use this amazing example of overkill, these toxins, to catch things?
Yeah, it's amazing that they need this overkill. I mean, one of the toxins would probably serve the purpose well. I think that the variety of toxins is there because their prey changes and they have to adapt their venom to the prey. So they make this suite of toxins in the hope that one of them will kill the prey. Cone shells are marine snails. And so, like a garden snail, they're pretty slow moving and they need some benefits. And what they do is they lay in wait and they put this long tongue out of their mouth called a proboscis. And on the end of the tongue, they've loaded it up with a modified hollow tooth. It's called a radula, and that tooth is stuffed full of venom. And they actually make a whole quiver of these arrows, or harpoons, if you like. They make them in one of the sacs in their internal digestive system, and they move them into an adjacent sac, and then they put their tongue back and pick up, with the muscular end of the tongue, they pick up one of these arrows that's stuffed full of venom, and then they impale their victim with this. Now, the victim, it depends on the kind of cone snail involved, but there are basically three kinds of victims. There are fish. Some of these cone snails hunt fish, and they're the ones that are dangerous to us. There are others, majority of them, hunt marine worms, and then there's still another group that hunt other mollusks.
Say I was to go near one and it stuck one of these things in my foot, what would I notice then?
Well, if it was of the kind that hunt fish, you could be in trouble. There have been 30 deaths from cone shell envenomation worldwide, and there's no antidote to it. So the first hint that you would have would be that you get blurred vision, and then your respiration starts to slow, and then you would die from asphyxia up to 7 to 9 hours later. But the thing that interested us was in the descriptions of such envenomations that they said that the patient died a painless death. And so I thought, well, I know what kills the person, but what is the component there that acts as an analgesic? So we went out on purpose to look for the analgesic component.
Have you tracked it down?
Yeah, we tracked. There are actually a number of different components, but the one that we tracked down, we got from a cone shell from Broome in Western Australia, Conus victoriae. Its name is it named after Queen Victoria, but in fact, it's not in the state of Victoria. It's in Western Australia in Broome. And this component is a small peptide of 16 amino acids long, and that acts as a very potent analgesic, between 1,000 and 10,000 times more potent than morphine.
How do you know it's going to work in us?
We don't. We know that it works in animal models of pain, and we're currently, just in phase two clinical trials, testing it on people who have painful sciatica. And the results of those studies will be known mid-year. At this stage, everything's coded, and so the patients don't know if they're receiving a placebo or the real drug. And then the results will be analyzed, and, well, the results will tell us whether it's going to be an effective medicine or not. So we've got our fingers crossed, as you can see. I've got both fingers crossed, my legs crossed. So we're hoping for a good result because there is really a big unmet need out there of patients who, for whom conventional analgesics are not working and they need something else. So we hope that the cone shell has the solution to their problems.
And that was Bruce Livett, who's talking to Chris there about getting painkillers from cone snails. Now, ultimately, in case you're worried that we're going to be mashing up snails to give to people, Bruce has actually been able to find the gene in the snails that encodes this venom. So you can basically make it in the lab without having to mash snails up. So no need to go, you know, scurfing around in the Great Barrier Reef to look for snails. So I think that's really fantastic. I hope the results of the trials are successful.
Let's hope it works.
Sorting out the sparks from the quarks, the Naked Scientists.
It is the Naked Scientists with Dr. Chris and Dr. Kat. In a second, Gavin Lang's here from Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, and he's going to be talking about how we don't get bitten by snakes, but what happens when you do, why they make venom, how we make anti-venom, and what that venom can also tell us about how our body works. And then later on in the programme, we've got Ben is drinking some nettle tea and also finding out how stinging nettles actually sting you. And we'll also be venturing back to Australia to catch up with Robin Williams, who was talking to Glenn King earlier this year. He's from the University of Queensland, and they're using one of the most venomous spiders in the world, but they've borrowed the toxin from it to help make a biodegradable and environmentally friendly pesticide. So we'll be joining them later. But right now,